It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Let's go. Hour number two of the drive underway. We start with the top four at four. Marcus Young is standing by in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Marcus?
Thank you, Russell. Number one, Ole Miss Rebels. They sweep Oklahoma to win their first men's College World Series title. Sorry, I just wanted to get that right for Bear. Women's? Well, I wanted to get it right for Bear, you know.
It's a men's College World Series.
Sweeping the Sooners over the weekend. Bittersweet, knowing that we dominated them at home, but having to see them lift the trophy.
Our trophy.
Mm.
They were wanting to fire that guy.
Yeah.
Like earlier in the season. Remember, they were number one, and we went down there and tore their kingdom down, and they were talking about Bianco being washed up and his best days are behind him, and they need to go find a young up-and-comer like Tony V. And it's sports, man. It's kind of funny when teams don't live up to expectations, how silly fans can get.
Happens way too often.
I mean, if they were the last team in, if they don't make the field of 64, they were firing him. Just unbelievable.
And number two, the Colorado Avalanche over the weekend defeated Tampa Bay Lightning 2-1 in game six, hoisting their Stanley Cup since 2001. The funny thing about it, though, as they were getting ready to pose for their team photo, Nicholas Obey-Kubel was skating over with the cup and tripped up and dented the cup.
Oh,
apparently this happens fairly regularly.
It does get dented pretty often, but it was just funny seeing the entire team ready for the photo, and he comes skating over.
Just drops
and
it?
He falls.
Yeah, it fell.
Yeah, you can see it. If you watch the clip, you can see it's at the base. It goes from the circle to a flat corner. And there's like a stilled photo, almost like the what you see, those art photos of everyone reacting different ways.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. But,
well, I mean, in all honesty, Russ, I mean, what do you expect? You're giving this priceless trophy to a bunch of idiot hockey players.
Oh. Well,
have you ever read the stories about, like, the crazy places that it's been and things that people have done with it?
Yeah, because every player on the team gets to take it to their hometown during their off season. So, yeah, with hockey being as international as it is, yeah, it goes all over the place.
Like they said, one time Mario Lemieux had it, and he had this huge rager at his house, and they woke up, and they're like, where the hell is the cup? Like they lost it. They're looking all over for it. It was in the bottom of his pool. They just left it in his pool.
Well, it was also funny. Nathan McKinnon, one of the alternate captains, said that he has been one of the drunkest at both two out of three Sidney Crosby parties after winning it. He said he hopes Sidney comes to his and becomes the drunkest of that one.
Do you think in the day and age of COVID and everybody's hyper germ conscious and everything, do you think there's any second thought at all to being the guy that's drinking beer or champagne out of the Stanley Cup at 5 a.m. today, wherever they're partying?
No, I already saw videos of them drinking champagne out of it in the locker room. They don't care.
Well, that thing's you'd have to like soak it in bleach before I'd want to even get anywhere near that thing.
Number three, Kyrie Irving and Brooklyn Nets seem to be heading towards a divorce potentially, while the Los Angeles Lakers are right now as the only known team to be seeking a sign-and-trade deal with Kyrie. It has been said on Wednesday that if he were to make that decision, he could exercise his $36.5 million option. And I think he would actually be able to join the Lakers for about $6 million, if I'm reading that right.
What's $6 million to the Los Angeles Lakers?
Well, it would just give them some extra space to actually take him in if he declines that option. So instead of taking 36.5, he would take 6 if he goes that way. They probably don't have a whole lot of cap space with how much LeBron and Davis are making, and Westbrook.
I mean, am I insane? Granted, I'm not an NBA expert. I'm a casual fan. But it just seems to me like if the Westbrook thing didn't work, I know Kyrie's a little bit younger, a little bit better, but he and LeBron have already had a volatile relationship where they couldn't coexist. Kyrie's gotten more eccentric. LeBron's gotten more demanding. Like, when do these teams just figure out you can throw money at big names that doesn't necessarily equate to championships? I think that has colossal disaster written all over it, and I'm here for it.
I mean, plus, you've got a guy coming in first time. I don't know if it's the first time he's been a head coach, but it's going to be a brand new head coach for you. Is his name Darvin Ham?
Darvin Ham is the guy. He's going to get run over like a Mack truck by all those big personalities.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about it's some of the biggest divas that have ever played in the NBA. Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook.
And finally, number four, some unfortunate news. Marlon Briscoe, the first black starting quarterback in the AFL, died today at the age of 76. He was a star quarterback at Omaha University before the Broncos drafted him as a cornerback. Thought this was interesting. He threatened that he would go back home to be a teacher if they didn't give him a chance at quarterback. And he was nicknamed the Magician after starting for the Broncos. He was a runner-up for the AFL Rookie of the Year. And then when they didn't give him a chance to repeat at quarterback, he became a Pro Bowl receiver with the Bills and won two Super Bowls with the Miami Dolphins as a receiver in the 1972 Dolphins, who had the perfect season.
Yeah, he's a member of that crew. He was Kyler Murray before Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm.
So he's quarterback before the merger.
Correct. He was the first black quarterback, and then, yeah, he switched over to receiver and ended up getting a couple Super Bowls out of it. So good for him. A
couple Super Bowls, a member of the undefeated team.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's unfortunate, but.
Life well lived. Good night, absolutely. Sweet prince.
All right, well done, Marcus. Appreciate it. Marcus Young bringing the heat this afternoon. Bear, do we have our guest on?
No. Hold on just a second, all Russell. Right.
I'm going to run down a special guest to join us here to kick off hour number two of the program. I remind you, Marcus's top four this afternoon is brought to you by our good, close, personal friends at Linderman Sports Medicine. If you have an issue right now, back pain, nerve damage, discomfort, whatever, and it's keeping you from doing the things that you want to do, maybe out in the yard playing with the kids, yard work, just walking around at the park, going to the gym, whatever it is you like to do, and you worry because nobody wants to go under the knife, right? You hear about, a guy goes in for back surgery, it ended up making it worse. Well, the miracles of modern science are pretty amazing, and Linderman Sports Medicine in Memphis is on the cutting edge of this. And without the cutting is the ironic part. Go check out LindermanSportsMedicine.com. Find out more about what I'm talking about. They do great work. LindermanSportsMedicine.com. Dr. Laura Linderman is a huge supporter of all things fan-run. And, yeah, their clinic is located in Memphis, but we got a lot of listeners in the Mid-State, in the Memphis area, and even folks here in East Tennessee. Wouldn't you make the six-hour drive to get your life back in order, get your pain solved without having to go through some invasive surgery with a long recovery process and all that? I'm telling you, man, check it out, LindermanSportsMedicine.com. It is crucial, critical, and unbelievable. They do great work at Linderman Sports Medicine. All right, let's bring in Trey Wallace from Outkick to join the festivities this afternoon live from Omaha, where he covered Ole Miss winning national championship in college baseball this weekend. Good afternoon, Trey. How are you, sir?
Hey, boys. I'm good. It's good to talk to you guys. And I'm just chilling in Omaha, man. Couldn't get out today. All the flights were gone. So another day in Nebraska.
All right. That's always a good thing. I mean, what was it like? I know a lot of our fans got to go and experience it last year, but for college baseball fans, I mean, the scene was pretty remarkable, packed house and everything. And for Ole Miss, you know, for that fan base, Trey, after watching their bitter in-state rivals win it all last year with the great program that both those schools have, that had to feel good for them to even the score with Mississippi State.
Yeah, man, and it was just cool from a college atmosphere environment, you know, that we see maybe in Atlanta or college football games or home games or whatnot. It felt like a darn home game yesterday. Like, I was talking to somebody about it. I was like, this feels like if Ole Miss and Oklahoma were playing in Oxford, and like Oklahoma got like a small amount of visitor allotment tickets. Like, that's what it felt like. It was a home game for the Rebels, and yeah, man, they got the job done, and they came back and said, okay, Mississippi State, if you can do something, then we can do something. And you know, the crazy part about it is, and I wrote about this earlier, it's like, there was an SEC team we talked about all during the regular season and for a good amount of the postseason, and that was Tennessee. And then we end the year talking about an SEC team that won the national championship. Like, talk about a year. I know Tennessee fans aren't going to hear it, but it is what it is. Sure. It's just a year of dominance from the Southeastern Conference when it comes to baseball, when it comes to publications and what's been out there.
Well, I was pulling for Oklahoma, Trey, just because A, I'm team petty, and if my team can't win it, I don't want another SEC team to win it. But B, I think from a 10,000 foot perspective, like I think it would have been nice to see a non-SEC team win it. The SEC has become so dominant in that sport; it's like college football. I think seeing. And I know Oklahoma's coming in the league, so I mean that's even then that would have been a quasi SEC championship. But like I just think for that sport to continue to grow, it can't be all SEC all the time. We need those California teams to get good again. I know Stanford was out there this year. We need some of those Big 12, those cornfield teams to be good. And quite frankly, I know it sucked to see it happen at Tennessee's expense with Notre Dame making it, but you know, Michigan was very good. We need some of those Midwest teams to be good as well. I mean, what's your take on that, Trey? Do you think that it's good for the overall growth of college baseball if it's just the SEC Invitational in Omaha every year?
You know, it's crazy, but like you could equate Ole Miss, and I don't know if I'm going to get this right, but I'm just going to say it and y'all can pick it away. You can equate Ole Miss to like a 13 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, that's what they were coming into this. I mean, they were one of the last teams selected, if not the last team selected in the tournament. You look at it overall, I mean, 50% of the teams in Omaha were from the Southeastern Conference. You know, you add in Texas and Oklahoma, you know, and I know that's 3-4 years away, you know, but that's, you know, that's six teams. It's crazy that we've gotten to this point. I think, I think more, I guess, is parity the right word for it? I guess it would be. But, I mean, you look around the country and you try to find baseball schools that maybe had down years that are trying to get back. And, you know, a lot of teams squandered opportunities as well. You know, I would imagine yesterday, if Tennessee was out here, I'd imagine that they'd have taken over the whole damn town. And they'd been probably a little bit crazier than what Ole Miss did. I mean,
it's going to happen.
There were thousands of people out here from Oxford. I don't know if they're from Oxford, but just Ole Miss fans didn't even have a ticket to the game. They just wanted to come out here. And so, you know, I look at overall college baseball, you know, let's get some more teams involved and maybe aren't here enough. Let them experience it. It's good for parity and whatnot, but for the time being, again, I'll say it, the SEC dominated the headlines all year, and that's crazy to talk about, because I'm not just saying it because we live in SEC territory, it's just, that's how it was. Tennessee was the most talked about team all season long, and then we get out here, and Ole Miss goes on this crazy run, and they end up winning it, so it's just, it's wild that that's how we started, that's how we ended. Is it how we get into next season? I'm sure it probably will be the same.
Tennessee finishes number 9 in the coaches poll that came out today. And that's, you know, fair enough for me. I mean, 8 teams make it to Omaha. Tennessee wasn't one of them. I think you can make the argument that Tennessee was the best team that didn't make it to Omaha. So 9 seems about right to me. This team is going to be right back in the mix next year, Trey. Talk about Tony Vitello's team. And they're going to have to make some changes. Obviously, the pitching, we kind of know what that is probably going to look like. The batting order is going to look quite different. Does this team make it to Omaha next year, in your opinion?
I think they've got all the tools to make it. I think what they, you know, picked up out of the transfer portal, what they'll have returning when it comes to pitching, they're going to get some hitting back. Keep your coaches intact. You know, no offseason moves. I'm like, I think that ship is kind of sailed. I do, because we got out here, and like the thing that stood out to me is, yeah, okay, Oklahoma's offense was pretty good. Ole Miss's offense exploded in the first game, you know, but they had close games. Last night was close. The other games against Arkansas were close. You know, it came down to pitching. And like to me, like that was the biggest thing Tennessee had this year, was pitching. You know, besides offense explosion, which is that's a given, okay? But it was pitching, man. And you know, I think Tennessee will have that next year, you know, to get them through. And hopefully you don't just play your worst baseball, you know, in the last series of the weekend, and then, you know, maybe, you know, pull one out or make it ugly during the midseason, then come back and get back on a roll. Like, there's different ways to go. But I think Tennessee has the tools to get back here. And, you know, it's crazy. Thinking about it, it's crazy that, you know, Tennessee went down there to Oxford and swept them, and then everything was going to hell in a handbasket. They were going to fire Mike Bianco, the head coach at Ole Miss. They were actually going to fire him the day after Memorial Day, which was the selection show. Then it turns out he gets in, and he leads his team to a national championship, and now he can get all the money he wants down in Oxford. It's just college baseball is so weird, man. But Tennessee has the tools to get back out here next year. Absolutely.
Are they really going to fire that guy? I mean, I'd heard that the fans wanted him gone, but was the administration planning on moving on him?
I was told that, and I was told this specifically by somebody who works in the SEC, that they had planned for a Tuesday press conference. Like, they were talking about having a Tuesday press conference. But then they got in. Now, I mean, look, and that's just one SEC person, so it's not like I'm reporting it, but I did hear that. They were, I mean, there was talk that went out of Oxford about it for the last half of the season, the back part of the season. And then if they wouldn't have made it after 22 years, potentially moving on, I mean, it could have happened. So it's crazy to think what could have been and then what has happened now. So I don't know, man. Baseball season comes to an end. And now we get football season starting here in about, 3.5 weeks in Atlanta. So bring it all on.
66 days to kick off for the Big Orange, Trey.
Oh, man, I can't get here quick enough. I'll even take that damn Vanderbilt versus Hawaii game the week before, like, the first weekend of the season, like the week zero. Like, give me that. I'll take that game.
There's some decent week zero matchups, I guess. You got any nuggets or anything for us football wise? Basketball, baseball, we'll take anything, Trey. We're not picky around here.
No, I know. I know. I think Tennessee had themselves a good weekend when it comes to recruiting. And texting with some folks here earlier today. A lot better than what's going on down in Florida right now.
Oh, my God.
I've been on the phone this morning with folks down there, talking about, you know, if folks haven't looked at it, go look what happened yesterday when Jaden Rashada, the quarterback, decided to pick Miami, and they were talking about NIL money and how much. I mean, that figure was inflated so much by the attorneys. That's not what he was actually giving down there. But if Florida just can't seem to get things right, in Tennessee, you know, lands a recruit or two. And you know, you keep it flowing in the positive direction. You come off a big weekend. You had Nico in town. You had the Conyer kid in town, France in town. So you're trying to shore up, you know, and at least, you know, snag one or two of these guys and make an impression as you get towards August and whatnot. It's about to be a dead period, so the coach is about to go all on their vacations for the next 2.5 to 3 weeks. And then they'll come back and, you know, they'll get ready to start fall camp, which I am told fall camp is going to, and I'm trying to get this date correct, fall camp's going to start on the 31st, which I think media day is going to be on like the 31st, which is a Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, of July. And then, yeah, and then fall camp will start August 1st for Tennessee. So it's moved up a little bit because they got that Thursday night game, but we are literally just under a month away, or just over, I'm sorry, from the start of Tennessee fall camp and getting the boys out there on the field and getting things rolling in the Southeastern Conference. I'm excited.
All right, good stuff, Trey. Appreciate it, man. Safe travels back home, and we will talk to you again soon once you return to K-Town.
Yeah, I'm glad you got back safe from Texas and everything. You know, I heard your interesting Whataburger takes. You know, I've been listening on the radio, which I don't agree with, but we'll just let those two.
Well, I mean, I don't hate on Whataburger. It's okay, but it is so overrated. And I don't know if you saw my other take, but I had my first Shake Shack experience last week, Trey. It, like, that just blows both Whataburger and In-N-Out Burger out of the water. Completely dominates both of those.
Well, Shake Shack is for a different, you know, range of people. You know,
it's,
Whataburger.
It's a burger joint. What are you talking about? It's a burger joint.
It's literally it's called a shack. Shake Shack.
No, it's that West Coast vibe type crap with Shake Shack. Don't give me that.
Oh, I could be wrong. I thought Shake Shack was very much Northeast New York City based. In-N-Out is the West Coast thing. In-N-Out is so overrated. I'm sorry. It is so overrated. Shake Shack, the way to go. I'm giving it away for free right now, too. I don't do that very often.
It's all damn fast food hamburgers, okay? So let's just, you know.
Okay,
it's not live or die, but
fair enough. But people get heated over that debate.
Just like the Popeyes chicken sandwich and the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, when that debate went down for what, months and months at a time.
Oh, that
was ludicrous.
Popeyes
spicy is incredible.
Yeah, it was good, actually. I know. Hey, boys, I appreciate y'all very much. Hope y'all have a great week, and I'll be texting you.
Safe travels home, Trey.
Talk soon. Trey Wallace of OutKick has left the building. Florida thing's pretty interesting.
It's pretty funny.
Do you think all right, Barry, nobody's going to hold this against you, but Billy Napier, 5 years from now, what's the narrative surrounding him?
He'll either be coaching on Saban's staff, getting retread, or he'll be at like Austin Peay.
He'll be taking the McIlwain path, like Central Michigan or something like that.
Probably. I never understood the hire to begin with, if you want my honest opinion.
It's so strange. I mean, to have that negative a perception around your program before you've coached a single game, before you've even led the Gators out of the tunnel a single time. That seems not good. All right, we got to take a quick break. Open up the phone lines here. You want to jump in? You want to respond to anything Trey had to say there? Or you want to take a shot at our Rickard Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question of the day? Does the fact that Tennessee dominated Ole Miss on their home field make you feel any better about the way the season ended for the Big Orange or the way next season might go? We'd love to hear from you. 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the show. We take a quick time out. Back with more right after this. Fan Run Radio. The Drive continues. Monday afternoon edition of the show. Russell, Bear, and Marcus taking the phone calls today. 865-546-8200. 546-8200. Your number to hop on board. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Phil. Good afternoon, Phil. You're on the Drive.
What do you say, W?
What's up, Philly?
How you, Bear and Marcus, doing?
Doing pretty good, man. How about yourself?
Hanging in there. Sonny, y'all bringing up Florida's coach. He's just going to be another harp chumper and a must chump and still beat us.
Got to beat him. It can't go down like that. It cannot go down like that, Phil.
Florida game's a firewall, Phil.
Well, if he don't beat Florida next this fall, then he's never going to beat Florida.
Well, I'll say this. We don't know what Florida is yet. I mean, they went 6-7 last year, but it got away from them. We know they've got some talented players down there. If they come in here and beat Tennessee, but and they end up going 9-3 or 10-2, have a pretty good team, and it turns out Napier is a great coach, then okay, like I'm not going to be as hard on Heupel. But if they come in here and beat Tennessee and end up 6-6, then yeah, I think that's a black mark on Heupel's resume and a terrible start for him in this rivalry. I think we all give him pass last year going down there to Florida. It's like Hooker's first road start. You know, it's his first year and all that stuff. That's tough. But
yeah,
all that stuff is reversed now. You've got home field advantage. They're breaking in the new head coach. You have to win that game if you're Josh Heupel.
Yeah, well. It's 20 years of misery or 19 out of 20 or something like that, isn't it?
Well, look, people might be saying, oh, Russell, that's harsh. You can't say that. Josh Heupel, it's year two. He's still building here. You can't make those kinds of demands. You can't have him. I'm sorry, guys. This is the SEC. It's big boy football. That's why you're paid $4 million a year. You don't get a honeymoon period when it comes to a 6-7 Florida team. That team comes to your house. You beat them. That's what a competent football coach does.
I mean, I hope he does. I'll believe it when I see it.
What do you guys think? If there were a line out on that game this week, what do you think it would be?
Florida? Oh, here. Probably us 3.5 to 6.5, somewhere in there, I would think.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, Bear.
I'd say probably about a pick 'em.
Really?
Yeah. The psychological factor is enormous in this series.
I don't know that Vegas is going to weigh that into it, though.
Yeah. You got to win it, man. You got to win it, Josh Heupel. I hate to put that on you in year number two, but it's just the way it is. This is the SEC. It's what you signed up for, big boy.
So what is your question you were talking about for the day?
Does the fact that Tennessee swept Ole Miss and Mississippi State on their home fields this year in college baseball, the last two national champions in that sport, does that make you feel better about the current state of the program?
I mean, the program's in good shape. It's just like anything else over there, it chokes. And when it comes big time, get on the stage, the basketball team choked and a football team choked in a bowl game. I mean, we're choked with the University of Choke. That's what we are.
Bear, do you agree with that? Are we the University of Choke?
No. No. Mm-mm. I don't agree with that.
I mean, those three seasons ended in very dismal fashion.
Yeah, I kind of compare this baseball team. It was all set up, but nobody since 1999, a number one seed, has won the whole thing. So I guess you got history against you. Maybe if Tennessee's loses about 15 or 20 games next year, they might have a better chance of winning it.
I think they're going to be right back in the same position, Phil. I think they're going to have a dominant starting pitching rotation. an absolutely loaded lineup. I think they're going to be number one for the majority of the season. And I think all that pressure is going to be right back on them. At a certain point, you just got to look it in the face and tackle it, man. You can't. Somebody's going to have to break that streak.
Well, that's true. They're going to have a closer next year that can get it done in the crunch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Did Walsh blow that? I mean, you know, Burns gave up the home runs, and then Sewell got rocked in that third game against Notre Dame. Or I don't know if he got rocked, but he gave up some hits. And, like, I don't think closer is really what did us in this year.
It did in the world, in the Notre Dame series. It got the closers didn't do well, and they started the wrong pitcher on the first day. They should have started Burns the first game. But it's hindsight's 20/20. You can pick it. I mean, sure. I'm sure he'll learn from his mistakes. I mean, he's still a young guy, and that's better than an older coach. They kind of set in their ways.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, he will. And, I mean, he admitted to, like, I remember the post-game comment from Vitello. They asked him, like, what went wrong in that game? And he said, every decision I made in the sixth inning on was wrong.
Yeah, so, I mean, Ole Miss won our national championship, and Loyola Chicago took our won our Final Four for us in basketball. It's kind of the way Tennessee is, you know what? We still can't beat Florida. See,
it's happening this year, Phil. Come on, you got to have a positive attitude, Phil. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
You know, he mentioned like a mental hold that Florida has over us. I don't buy that necessarily. Maybe over some of a fan base, but I don't think the players go into these Florida matches and go, oh man, here we go again. These guys have dominated this series. I don't think they care. I think the players and the coaches just go into it as, hey, these are our rivals. Let's get these guys. Let's beat them.
I think you're both right, guys. I don't think the players, you know, kids today don't understand anything that happened like more than 2 years ago, but fans, like, we feel that we know that, and I think that anxiety that the fan base feels, the players pick up on that. They won't admit it, but they do. And like, there's a vibe in a stadium, right? And when things start going wrong, and the fans go, oh boy, here we go again, like the players feel that, the coaches feel that. I won't be convinced otherwise. That's just the way it is. So history does matter, but history can be overcome. I never thought I would see Tennessee win an SEC tournament championship in basketball, but I'll be damned if I didn't see it about 2 months ago. So, I mean, I've seen Tennessee beat Florida before, so I mean, I don't think it's as big a hill to climb as that basketball tournament was.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point.
Phil, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you, bud. Phil doing his best to shine a ray of sunshine onto the festivities this afternoon.
I don't want to say to him anymore. I mean, it's just, I don't even, why would you pay attention to something that makes you this miserable? I mean, honest to God. Love Phil, but man.
Well, I mean, I get what he's saying. Like, yeah, The history of that series is not good. The bowl game, here's the difference between basketball, baseball, football. Like, we had a good basketball and baseball team, and the way those season ended really, really hurt. We didn't have that great a football team, man. They were 7-5, and they're playing in a bowl game without their, you know, Alante Taylor sits that game out, and it's whatever. It's a glorified exhibition game because that's what those types of bowl games have become. Now, I don't like losing to, I can't even remember who we play, Purdue. I almost said Wake Forest. Like, who cares, right? It's I mean, it sucked at the time, and we were all pissed off, and it was a bad call there on the goal line. But at the end of the day, like, what does it matter if we won? Like, nobody remembers that. Basketball and baseball are different. That was much more disappointing. Those teams should have gone further. There was a lot riding on those tournament games, and it was a bitter disappointment. This football game, this first month of the season, it's just huge for this program that has been down for 15 years. It's been 15 years since Tennessee went to Atlanta. It's been 15 years since Tennessee was nationally relevant. And if you win those first four games, you beat Florida and Pitt this year, and you're 4-0 headed into your off week, you will be solidly ranked in the top 15, maybe the top 10, with 2 weeks to prepare for a trip to LSU. Another big, meaningful, and very winnable game. That will be just a huge moment. I mean, I'm trying to think of a word to describe it. I can't think of it. I mean, it will be, the last time we were there, it was 5-0 with you had just beaten Georgia on the Dobbs-Nail boot game, and you're going down there to Texas A&M with a chance to be 6-0. And just about sew up the Eastern Division title. We all know what happened. Butch Jones fell flat on his face. He never recovered. And that shows you guys that you get those opportunities in sports. You build up. It took Butch 4 years to build to that point, and he got one chance to walk through that door. One chance. Eminem, one chance to walk through that door, and he walked straight into the frame, busted his head open, bled all over himself, and he died. Let's call it what he died, man. Like that was the end of his coaching career. He'll never get another chance. He's not going to do well at Arkansas State. That was his opportunity, and he blew it.
They did give him an extension.
You don't know when that opportunity is going to come. It took him 4 years. I mean, Heupel might have it here in year number two. So, yeah, Florida, they're going to lose the Urban Meyer Classic. Utah's going to go in there and slap them around on their home field to open up the Billy Napier era. And, you know, that fan base is already in disarray. Apathy has set in. They'll probably bring about 1,100 people up here for that game. Going to be a sold-out Neyland Stadium. Tennessee fans frothing at the mouth, smelling blood in the water. You better deliver. Am I putting too much on Josh Heupel right now, Bear? Let's call it what it is. You better deliver, man. It's the SEC. You get paid big bucks. You go out there and win a game like that.
Agreed. I mean, that's why we brought you here. That's why you're getting paid the big bucks. And that would really, man, if we beat them, that fan base will check out.
Well, I mean, you could
be glorious.
We're getting set to, since the league went to the divisions in 92, I mean, that rivalry has defined, I mean, even more than Alabama. It's defined everything about Tennessee football. That one game in September has been the biggest game on Tennessee's calendar for over 30 years now. And we're getting set to go into a new era, the era of the Super Conference, with permanent opponents or whatever they're going to do. It's not going to be division play anymore. And this is a chance to kind of put that whole aspect of Tennessee football and that rivalry is kind of a chance to put it to bed and say, look, Spurrier and Urban Meyer aren't there anymore. You guys are what you were before Spurrier got there. It was just another SEC team. Just another SEC team. And you can flip the script a little bit if you're Josh Heupel. Huge opportunity. coming up against Florida this year. We got to take a quick break. Speaking of Florida, they are melting down in Gainesville. If you're just joining us, John Bryce over at Football Scoop has written about this. He's got some great quotes in it from this lawyer who helped negotiate the $9 million Rashada deal, and the Florida folks firing back. Disarray for Billy Napier. He hasn't even coached a game yet. We'll give you some more of the pertinent details when we continue. Stay with us. It is The Drive. It is Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this. (5) 546-8200 is your number if you want to get up with us here this afternoon on the show. So more on the dysfunction down there at Florida, as you've got this back and forth in the media now between their NIL group and this lawyer, Michael Caspino.
The Gator Collective, huh?
Yeah, he's gone on the record. His comments after four-star quarterback Jaden Rashada committed to Miami over the weekend, choosing Miami over Florida. And Caspino does an interview with On3 Sports, which is new websites kind of targeting or competing against 247 and rivals. And Caspino tells On3 that Rashada's multi-million dollar deal with the Hurricanes was less money than what Caspino alleged Florida's, quote, most dysfunctional collective in all of college football had offered to Rashada. Here's the quote. Florida is the most dysfunctional collective in all of college football. I plan on steering my clients away from them. From my standpoint, I never want to deal with them again. If it weren't for the collective that's completely dysfunctional at Florida, Rashada probably would have been there. Wow. I mean, you're about putting somebody on blast just publicly. I guarantee you there are 13 other SEC coaches sitting around their offices right now reading this morning, just having a nice, good giggle at Florida's expense.
Heck yeah.
So Florida, the Gator Collective, which is billed as a, quote, official partner of the Florida Gators, their collective that launched earlier this spring claims more than $5 million in seed money at its onset. They have responded in a statement posted to the official Gator Collective Twitter account. The recent comments by California lawyer Michael Caspino have been brought to our attention. Gator Collective has never had any communications with Mr. Caspino about Jaden Rashada or any recruits. Rather, Gator Collective has refused to engage in any dialogue with Mr. Caspino on numerous occasions, as Gator Collective does not approve of his tactics and has no interest in engaging in activities which violate Florida law and NCAA interim policy that may put athletes' eligibility at risk.
That was a mouthful.
Well, do you think, and listen, I'm not naive. Newsflash, lawyers sometimes, you say twist the truth, I say lie. Lawyers sometimes lie, Bear. Why would he be lying about this?
Who, Caspino?
Yes.
Why would he
be making up that Florida lost out in a bidding war? Or he's not even saying that they lost out in a bidding war. He's saying that they offered more, but that his client, Rashada, just liked Miami more.
I don't know why he would say that.
Maybe because it's true? I mean,
there is that. I do find it funny that the two deals, the two major deals this guy's done, it makes me wonder if he was a source for the article on Nico when the story broke that it was $8 million. Scott likes getting his numbers out there. He's trying to get more kids to.
Yeah.
He's wanting to make money. He's awesome. And here's,
one more quote. This is from John Bryce over at Football Scoop today. Darren Heitner, a sports and intellectual property lawyer who is involved in Florida's collectives called out Caspino on Twitter yesterday for admitting to an NCAA violation, saying, quote, if Rashada took an NIL deal, lesser or not, by picking the Hurricanes, that's a violation no matter what his contract states. Rashada left millions on the table. Millions is what Caspino had said. He did not pick the highest offer. But here's my thing is, this guy is not an idiot, right?
Caspino?
He knows. Yeah, he knows that he knows what the NCAA rules are regarding this stuff. And he's basically thumbing his nose at the NCAA. He's basically daring him. He's like, I wish you would talk to this Rashada kid. I wish you would talk to Nico. Because guess what? They're my clients. You won't be talking to them. You'll be talking to me. And the courts have pretty much ruled that, hey, you can't tell these kids what to do. Why would they go back and say you can't tell them what to do in high school when they've already said you can't tell them what to do as far as how much money they can make and how they can profit off their image in high school?
I don't know how they would. I don't know, but I don't know enough about like the constitutional law stuff to even hazard a guess.
Prevent somebody from making a living. I mean, that's pretty much what they've said. I mean, he's basically daring the NCAA to do something about it. And
I mean, would it be any different than say if a you know an actor that's a minor, like a minor actor, they would never dream of doing that.
What do you mean?
Basically preventing them from making money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example.
I mean, it's as close as you can get. I mean, there aren't very many kids under the age of 18 that have that kind of talent, whether it be musical, acting, athletic.
Just but like Macaulay Culkin's making millions of dollars when he's like 5 years old. I mean, why can't these dudes at the age of 17 go ahead and profit? They absolutely can. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the NCAA is going to rule Jaden Rashada and Nico Yamalava ineligible and say they can't play for Miami and Tennessee respectively, and they won't, and the schools will be placed on probation. And maybe I'll sprout wings out the side of my head and learn to fly, Bear.
Yeah, I think that would be more likely. They don't. NCAA don't want to see the inside of a federal courthouse ever again. They lose.
I mean,
because they're trying to argue against. I mean, some of this stuff, like when we had what was that gentleman's name? Daniel Libet from Sportico. And you talk to people like that, and like, you know, what the NCAA's their problem is, they're arguing against some like foundational parts of our country as far as like federal law.
This issue has been decided, and I do think that there need to be, people call them guardrails or just universally agreed upon rules, and it doesn't seem like there's much in that direction right now, but I guess that's where the transformation committee or whatever comes in. There could be some new rules here soon, or a new organization or something like that. But in the meantime, it can be very confusing to these schools and the players and for us as media as well. But Florida, the Florida situation. People ask all the time, is Tennessee, are they aggressive in NIL? Are they doing the right stuff with NIL? I generally think so. It's pretty clear that Florida is struggling on this front.
Oh, yeah. And I'm here for it. And
we should all be glad. Stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive underway when we continue. Marcus will join us with the top five at five. Stay tuned for that. 60 more solid-ass minutes, as Will Wade would say, headed your way next right here on Fan Run Radio.